Welcome to The Brains Behind It, the official podcast of BrainHackers.com. The source for smart strategies to improve your life, one brain hack at a time. In this podcast, we talk to the leaders and innovators behind great organizations and find out the secret to their success. Here's your host, editor-in-chief of BrainHackers.com, and two-time Guinness record holder for memory, Dave Farrow.
Hey there, Brain Hackers. Dave Farrow here. I'm talking with Pete Canavan about the top three threats to your security that are actually highly preventable. Apparently, there's some simple things you can do to avoid the biggest risks in life. So this next 10-minute interview, man, you got to check it out. Hey, Pete, welcome to the show.
Hey, Dave. Thanks for having me.
All right, so you are a security expert. Tell us a little bit about your background, your cybersecurity. You're an IT expert. You also help with physical security, whether it be like personal combat, firearms, martial arts, all that stuff. So tell us a little bit about how you got into that.
Yeah, lots of things. I've been running my own IT company since 1995. So I've been dealing with securing clients' networks and systems and accounts for quite a while. Obviously, in the last 5 or 10 years, that's gotten a lot worse with regard to the number of threats out there with identity theft and ransomware, malware, viruses, et cetera. So I've been doing that for a long, long time and helping my clients, you know, put into practice the things that can keep their, you know, their systems safe, their accounts safe. I've also been training in martial arts for over 2 decades. I'm a master instructor and have taught hundreds, if not thousands of people at this point in how to protect themselves, men, women, and children. And so part of that is, you know, the obvious physical self-defense part of it, but there's also the mental side of it, you know, how to prepare yourself mentally, and then the other intrinsic things that people benefit from, you know, the discipline, the fortitude, et cetera. So
I would say actually for the martial arts, the mental side is everything. You know, I was a boxer for many years. I did martial arts for about 20 years now as myself. And the mindset of being able to defend yourself and fight has prevented more fights in my life than I can possibly imagine. And it's not just physical fighting, but the same sort of mindset. There's a lot of data that shows that people, you know, for example, young people who are involved in sports make much more money when they grow up. That's a well-known statistic over the crosses all cultures, race, gender, nations all around the world. And a lot of people attribute it to that sort of competitive spirit, that sort of, you know, fight, you got to get knocked down, pick yourself back up, and that sort of thing. So lots of ways to fight, obviously, not just with your hands, but that's a big part of it.
The warrior mindset is something that I do some training on. I have videos on there on YouTube about it. And it's essentially what you're talking about. It teaches people how to sort of flip that switch between, you know, I've got this challenge in front of me and how do I get past this challenge? It could be a physical confrontation. Yep. It could be a relationship problem. It could be something at work. But basically it teaches you, hey, what do I got to do to get through, around, under, over this obstacle in my way? And failure is not an option.
You know, there's something actually in what you just said, that you presuppose something that is actually a struggle for a lot of people, and your presupposition is that it's up to you. One of the first things that we know from data is whether it's, you know, grit or tenacity or, you know, whatever, you know, metric we're measuring. If somebody believes that it's society's problem or the boss's problem to fix this HR issue I'm dealing with or whatever, that might be true. You know, or the union's problem or your parents' problem or whatever, if it's somebody else's problem other than you fixing
finger
your own
point.
Problems. Yeah. True or not, you're not going to be as successful in life. That we know that from data. If the first thing you think of is that this is somebody else's fault and I have to make them pay or I have to, you know, get them to change how they do things. I want to be, you know, treated differently. You're not going to be successful financially. You're not going to have more fulfilling relationships. You're more prone to depression, all sorts of things. But the people who think that any problem that comes into their life, the first person that they should try to have solve it is themselves. And only when that fails do they look for other help. Those people are going to make more money, have happier relationships, better relationships with their kids, all sorts of different metrics.
Every aspect.
That independence as well.
Sure, every aspect of life. And that's a critical component is understanding that it is personal responsibility and you can't blame other people because the blame game just doesn't work.
So is that one of the first principles of security, I guess, is
to first take responsibility for your own security, because, you know, the government's not going to help you. Like ransomware. Oh, my God. When I heard about ransomware, for the people who don't know, I run a business. It's a small business, makes like, you know, $500,000 a year, but though, so that's, you know, not too small. And somebody can try to get a virus on our computer system, and then we have to pay them money to get it off of the computer system. And where are the police in this? Where is the cybersecurity? Where's the FBI in all of this? They're like, meh, that sucks. You should probably pay it. That's like the advice that you get. It's absolutely insane out there. No one's here to help you, but you gotta, you know, step up and take precautions. Back up all your stuff, all sorts of things. So like things like that, I guess, is like that mindset of just you're in it. At the end of the day, the buck stops with you.
And that sort of segues perfectly into what I wanted to talk about. One of the topics is the complacency and denial problem that exists, because most people deny that threats exist because they are uncomfortable talking about them. A lot of people will say, well, you know what, that may happen to somebody else. I don't think it's going to happen to me. I'm careful, or I live in a good town, or I go to a good school, or, you know, my job is secure, the building, etc.
What are the chances, right?
Right. What are the chances? It's not going to happen. Well, you know what? There is a chance, because people that are involved in these issues, whether it's an active shooter, whether it's just a workplace violence, whether it's sexual assault, whatever the problem is, every single person says the same thing. And that is, I never thought it would happen to me. Mm-hmm. And so denying that that threat exists, whatever it is, whether it's a ransomware attack on your small business, because you're saying, well, you know, I'm a small business. I only do a certain amount of money a year. Why would they go after me and not some Fortune 500 company? Well, because you probably have a lot easier security to break than a larger company.
Target, and you can get quicker money and quicker cash. And those Fortune 500 companies have, like, you know, backups and backups and backups. And maybe they have investigators that are going to, you know, find you out, where I don't, right? Yeah, no. So we're a soft target. So that's the first big threat, is your own complacency and your own denial, I guess, that threats actually exist.
Definitely. And once you get past that and understand that there are many threats, and you need to educate yourself however you do it, whether it's through material that I provide or somebody else or research on your own, you need to understand that what the threats are so that you can begin to protect yourself. So that leads then to sort of the next thing, which is our comfort zones.
And this I love how we started this video saying, what are the top three threats? People are thinking, oh, like terrorism, ransomware, identity theft. But we're saying, no, the biggest threats are you, your complacency, your comfort zone, your denial. That's the big threat. If you take care of those, all the other threats go away. So I love how we're kind of switching that responsibility back.
Sure. And it's not that these other threats aren't valid, but the likelihood of you being a victim goes way, way down when you begin to address some of these other things. And so, for example, our comfort zones. Everybody is comfortable in their daily routines. It doesn't matter if you're going to the same supermarket all the time, or you're walking a dog down the same street, or you're driving back and forth to work, or you're, you know, where you're going to the gym, et cetera, coffee shop. We all have our routines that we do. But guess what happens? When we are going about our daily routine, we're complacent because it's our comfort zone. We've done it yesterday. We did it last week. We did it last month. We're going to do it tomorrow and next month and next week. So we expect things to be the same day in and day out. And this could be in the online realm. It could be in the offline realm. And so, for example, you in your house tonight go to sleep. I take you in the middle of the night and I move you to another house in another bedroom in another town. You wake up tomorrow. Boy, are you going to be freaked out. You're probably going to be a little scared. You're going to be uncertain. You're not going to know. Now, are you in any sort of immediate threat? Not necessarily, but boy, is your comfort level gone, because you are totally uncomfortable because you're not familiar with what's happening. And so once we begin to look at our daily routines in a new light and say, you know what, I need to be a little bit more aware when I'm going about my day-to-day routines and the things that I'm comfortable doing, it's going to take your natural ability to be more aware of safety issues way, way up, instead of being down here, because it's like, well, you know, I'm going to take the dog for a walk tonight. And I walked the dog down that street last night. But tonight, maybe there's somebody following you that you don't notice.
Well, and what you're talking about actually is you don't want to get to the point of paranoia. But say, for example, you're traveling, right? There's a lot of places in this world where you're traveling, you know, and going to a nightclub is not going to a nightclub. you know, especially if you look like you're an American in some areas of the world. I won't mention any, you know, specific spots, but there's a lot of, you know, areas that somebody who looks American, not necessarily white, but looks American, let me be clear, can be a target, whether it's panhandlers, whether it's kidnappers, all sorts of things. And so going to a club is no longer just going to a club. Going to a bar is no longer just going to a bar. It takes on a different sort when you're in a different place. So getting out of that comfort zone of just thinking that everything's safe all the time. Now, how do you balance that and not get hypervigilant, though?
Well, I think what happens is, and just to kind of finish what you're saying with the travel sort of safety, our perspective in terms of what it is that we're used to is going to be based on wherever we are in terms of what country it is. If it's the United States, we have a certain expectation. If we're in another country, we have a different expectation. So when you travel in between these other places, you are not familiar with how, for example, maybe things like fire safety is handled in that country. We know here if there's a fire, there's probably a fire suppression system. There's a fire hydrant not too far away. If there's a fire, you know, it's probably going to be, someone's going to be there within a couple of minutes and start putting a fire out.
Yeah.
Well, those sort of standards that we're used to may not be the same and most likely are not the same in other countries. And so you have to educate yourself, especially if you travel a lot, on what the differences could potentially be, whether it's the hotel you're staying at, the restaurant you plan on going to, the conference center or convention center, and take a look at these things ahead of time. Because if you prepare and educate yourself ahead of time, if there is an issue, you're going to be more prepared than if not. And that's the bottom line.
All right. So we have denial, we have your comfort zone. And so how do we deal with the comfort zone? You want to be able to get used to being out of your comfort zone. You want to not get too comfortable and not get into the zombie-like state and be more aware. Is that your advice?
Awareness is absolutely key. And this is where you were just going a minute ago. We have to make it part of our routine. A good routine, not a comfort level, you know, ignoring problem routine, but a good routine of being aware of things. You know, when you need to not be distracted, for example, by technology. How many people are distracted by technology? We see it every day. It doesn't matter if it's your phone dinging, if there's a message or there's emails coming in, or you're walking down the road like this, or you're playing music too loud. All of these things, and technology is a huge problem. And I'm an IT guy, so yeah. I love technology. Otherwise, I wouldn't do what I do. But at the same time, I also see the threats that have been created through our dependency on technology and our excessive, I believe, use of technology in our daily lives. You know, you go out to a restaurant, how many people are sitting there on their phones and they're not talking to each other?
Walking down the street and bumping into things. Yeah, no, this reminds me actually I was coming out of the airport with a friend of mine. We were just chit-chatting, and I was honestly zoning out, to be honest. And I noticed, like, just when we walked up to his vehicle, you know, he paused just before we got past the backseat area, the backseat door, right? And he looked in, and then he walked forward. I'm like, I nearly bumped into him. I'm like, what was that for? And he says, oh, no, he lived in Latin America for a while, and he says, listen, I just got into the habit of always looking in the backseat before I get into a car. And I just, like,
blew my mind, right? Because there was where he lived, there was a lot of carjackings, like a tremendous amount. And that was what some people would do. And it's just like, that's what you're talking about. A habit like that of just double check. Now I check whenever I'm walking up to my car, and there's that age old phrase, you know, yeah, maybe just cause you're paranoid doesn't mean they're not out to get you. You know, it doesn't mean you're not right.
And it's not paranoia. And that's what I think a lot of people, they think, well, how do I, you know, sort of balance this, you know, awareness side of things with the paranoia side of things. And, you know, if you are simply educating yourself on the threats that exist and you establish some good safety routines, like when you enter a building, knowing where the exits are, mm-hmm. know where, you know, there's something that could protect you if something were to occur. And it doesn't have to be something crazy, you know, like an active shooter. It could be a fire. It could be a flood. It could be an earthquake. It could be a tornado. I mean,
well,
look at.
I also want to ask you about kids, because I've got a 4-year-old. But I want to first get to the third point after comfort zone. What would you say is the third biggest threat or issue with safety that we have to deal with? The denial and
comfort. Well, personal boundaries is something else that I think is a problem, because most people never think about how much is too much? And so if you've never thought about that, now you as a martial artist, as a boxer, as somebody who's done some of that physical stuff, you know that if somebody's going to push the wrong button or they're going to get, you know, in your face too much, you've got to know where that line in the sand is to know, hey, this person's approaching me. I don't know who they are. I don't know what their intentions are. So you need to know, okay, if this person gets this close to me and they're not stopping and I tell them, hey, can I help you? What's going on? Why are you, you know, coming at me so quickly or, you know, whatever it is.
Yeah, I've actually had that assertive. I never really thought about it, but I had, there's a few times where perhaps this might be news to some women, but guys experience this quite often where you're going to encounter some other guy who is stepping up to you to try to like, is in a threatening way and it doesn't go anywhere. They'll yell at you or something because ego or whatever, call it a guy thing. And then they walk away. Like most of these don't turn into a fight, but you know, every time one of these things happen, you're right. I know exactly how close somebody has to be to hit a jab because I was boxing. Right. So I know within inches, you know, if somebody has longer arms, I'm a little farther away. And also, I stare at their hands. The minute that there's some sort of tension, I'm not looking in their eyes anymore. I stare at their hands and I also turn to the side, and it's just this sort of instinctual thing. And you're still friendly, still, hey, are you okay? What's going on and everything?
Right, but it's kind of like, so what's going on?
Yeah,
you know, but see, you've made that a habit. It's become instinctual for you. Other people need to do the exact same thing.
You don't have to be a boxer.
So you get that instinct. You get hit too much by bigger guys than you. That's how I don't recommend that method.
Right. But, you know, and that's where, man or woman, it doesn't matter. If we have something that is going to give us an advantage, because you don't necessarily need to have years of training in martial arts or boxing or that sort of thing. There are some things that you can use, and they are basically self-defense weapons for everyday carry. It could be a defensive flashlight that you can blind somebody with while you get your pepper spray out. Kind of a 1-2 punch.
And the thing is, a lot of people make fun of those things, like holding on to the keys and things like that. But if you actually look at camera footage of actual altercations involving firearms and stuff, it is the person who throws a can of beans at the guy in the grocery store that then the guy with the gun runs away. Like, it's this weird human nature thing. Like, they're all hyped up already, and the minute somebody punches back or fights back, even if you're using your fists versus a firearm, which sounds insane, the people who fight survive and live to tell the tale. And the people who don't, they cower. Then the person with the gun gets more ego. And time and time again, you see these things where logically it seems insane. Why are you punching this person? But there was one camera footage I saw of like an 80-year-old woman who punched a guy who was in like a Quickie Mart kind of corner store type thing, who was robbing the place, and she just like hauled off and just starts punching him, hitting him with her purse, and he goes, oh crap, what am I doing? And then he runs away, and it's like, this guy has like 50 pounds on her, could just level her with one punch, has a gun. But it's the mindset of, they don't expect to be challenged, they don't expect to be fought. When they are challenged, that they're already, you know, building up their courage to do this nefarious thing. And basically they want to get an
easier target. You know, you don't be an easy target. You don't have to be Kung Fu master. You just have to be a very difficult target.
And, you know, when we're prepared, that allows us to remain calm in the face of some sort of adversity. Mm. It could be, and it doesn't, where that comes from. But what that does is that when you're prepared, it allows you to act immediately. Mm. It allows you to act decisively. You don't hesitate. And those little seconds, those milliseconds, can absolutely help. So that enables you to basically be ruthless if necessary. Mm. And understand that if this is going to happen, or more appropriately, when this happens, because that kind of changes your mindset. Well, if it happens, no, when it happens, this is what you're going to do. And so that is a huge shift that people can make, to understand that it's not being paranoid if you're prepared, because it allows you to be more calm. It allows you to understand, okay, when something happens, I know what I'm going to do. It doesn't matter if somebody's approaching me on the street. It doesn't matter if I'm getting some sort of attack coming into my computer system, or somebody's trying to do something else, carjack me. I mean, online or offline, you have to think about certain things. And so when we're out and about in our daily routines, going back to that for a minute, think about, okay, I'm going to the store. What could happen to me? You're not being paranoid. You're simply saying, well, if I come out, I want to make sure that my baby is going in the car first, not my groceries. Mm. You know, if something happens, if there's a car parked next to me by the driver's side and I can't see in, well, maybe I want to come back around and get in my passenger side first. Mm. So little things that we can do not require anybody to have any sort of training. All it requires them is to think about it a little bit and prepare.
And also that awareness helps you for things that are not threats, but still dangers, if that makes sense. You know, like the you put the groceries in first and maybe your kid runs out into traffic and you know, doesn't pay attention to you. Or if you're not paying attention, you're not focusing, maybe you leave the kid. Like there's horrible stories of parents who left their kid in the child seat because they were zoning out and they forgot that the kid was in there. And of course, it's like horrible tragedies like that. If you're paying more attention, you're aware that threats exist, you're aware that the world is a dangerous place and you prepare for it, that can help prevent some of those even accidents from happening.
And what that actually does is it empowers people.
Yeah.
It instills confidence in people. It gives them clarity and mindfulness about what's happening. And if we have greater peace of mind, that means we can worry less because we know that we are more prepared to deal with problems.
So, we're going over time here, but I have to ask also about kids. Here is my question. I got a 4-year-old son and the current, it's kind of tough because he goes into school and there's a lot of work to try to get them to not be rough with each other. Obviously kids fighting is something that the teachers, you know, really, really scold, and rightfully so. But they also try to stop almost any sort of horseplay. Kids chasing each other, grabbing each other, things like that, even the slightest physicality. And it concerns me because it makes a child less prepared for if an adult tries to grab them, right? So the general knowledge, and this is where my question comes in, apologize for the long lead up here, but the general accepted wisdom is to make your kids afraid of strangers, right? And I think that is completely the worst thing you could possibly do, because that's like a predator's great dream. Oh yeah, I want my prey to be afraid of me, right? What you want them to do is to be able to turn a switch and fight if they are threatened. And if there is danger, and if there's not danger, then they're playing. And I'm trying to teach my child the difference between playing and actually fighting and defending yourself, and that there is a place for both. What do you think about that? And do you think that these, you know, school systems and whatever the system is not really taking into account that aspect?
I think they're going from one extreme to the other.
Yeah.
And we need to find some middle ground. Kids are going to play. They're going to roughhouse. They're going to, you know, push and shove and wrestle on the ground. I mean, when I was in grade school, I mean, we used to, you know, have wrestling matches, you know, on the grass and get yelled at when we went in because we had grass stains all over. But
and apparently it's really important. Fun. It's really important for their brain development to actually do rough play.
It is. And it by taking that away, you're actually doing the child a disservice. Now, talking about them becoming a prey, you know, for someone who's a predator and is looking at that. I just did a safety workshop for a summer camp, younger kids this summer. I did 2 sessions, one with some real small kids, like 4 and 5 and 6 year olds. And then for like 7, 8 and 9 year olds. So I did 2 sessions with them and they were both a little different, but essentially the same thing came out of it. And that was, if you feel threatened, you need to assert yourself and say, stop immediately. And we all practiced it and it was fun and the kids were having a blast, but I made them do it a bunch of times. And so they got, you know, used to that and, you know, saying, stop, leave me alone. And then if they had to, and then I had them kick, you know, kick at the shins of the bad person, you know, because if somebody's trying to abduct your kid or worse, they are looking for an easy target, as is any predator, basically.
Yeah.
So if you show them that you're not going to be an easy target and you're kicking and screaming and punching and biting and you just become an absolute crazy person or child, that person that is trying to abduct them or whatnot is going to say, you know what, man, this is not worth it. The kid's screaming, they're spitting, they're kicking. So I talked to them about that and I think they got it. I hope they got it. Because it's so imperative that we teach them the right things to do in a bad situation. And by.
And then you don't just tell them. We have to actually get them to do it. Otherwise, it won't
happen in real life. You know, there's footage of kids being taken in shopping malls. It's tragic. It's horrible if you ever see this. And it is exactly what you're saying. The mom is right there, turned around for a little while. Somebody grabs the arm and just walks away and then gets lost in the crowd. And the kid is just taught, oh, I'm supposed to do what adults tell me to do, you know? And if in that moment the kid was like, stop, and anything, the mom would have turned around, never would have happened. The guy also, most cases was a guy. There was one I saw that was female, so I don't want to, you know, fully segmenting, but essentially the predator would be caught too and wouldn't ever do it again, you know.
Teach your kids a safe word. That's one of the best things I think that I've ever heard is, if God forbid something does happen to you, mm-hmm. and somebody needs you to come with them, which should almost never happen, but if that were to be the case, it could be an uncle or aunt maybe you haven't seen in a while, teach the kid a safe word. Okay, what's that code word that lets me know that you're okay? And if you don't have that code word, that kid better turn around and run or scream or yell help or fire, which is even better because people don't want to help, but they want to come see pretty fire. And so then that all of a sudden now empowers the child. They're not afraid because they know, hey, this person is bad. This is what I was taught to do, and now I'm going to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
the only way you're going to do that is by practicing it. And you know, you can't just tell your kid once and expect them to remember. You need to drill that into them. And the younger the child, the more you need to drill it into them.
So what age can you start doing these sorts of things? What age would you say is key?
2, 3.
All right. I'm late then. I'm a little late to the party.
As soon as they understand, I would say every child is going to be different. But as soon as they start to understand being safe and that you're trying to prevent them from hurting themselves or being hurt by somebody else, once they understand that, then I think it is a much easier task to educate them.
Well, my son also knows that there are bad people and good people, you know, and to not hurt good people, otherwise you're a bad person, so be nice, you know, but also there are bad people, right? So you got to be aware of that. But yeah, I didn't think of the code word, and I didn't really go through, you know, a lot of the trials and the testing, you know, as much as I should. So that's
yeah, keep it simple. I mean, he's 4. Yeah.
Make it a game.
You know, so make it a game, but a serious game. And let him know this is not a fun game. This is a game to help you learn how to keep yourself safe so that, you know, mom and dad don't have to worry about you, that you're always going to be safe and protected so that you can grow up to be, you know, whatever you want to be.
There you go. All right. Well, I want to thank you very much, Peter. You're definitely brains behind this, and look forward to more of your content on security. This has been a great interview. We went over time, but it was totally worth it. Thank you.
Thanks, Dave.
Thank you for listening to The Brains Behind It. And remember to check out brainhackers.com for more. If you have a suggestion for the next interview or comment, please email editor@brainhackers.com. If you want a free 30-minute marketing consultation from Dave Farrow and his team, then email editor@brainhackers.com.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.